Howdy there. You're back. Thanks. Jackie, you want to tell the people what's up?
Hey, y'all. On today's episode of To and Fro, we speak with Mississippi State University Assistant Professor Kiana Cutts about the queer Southern experiences and how that is perceived differently below the Mason-Dixie.
We also speak about Dr. Cutts' piece about her own challenges coming out to a Black Southern mother, along with a heartfelt letter she wrote to her. So, all right, Jackie, you ready?
I mean, I'm always ready. Hold on. Is this too close to my face?
I don't know, Jackie. Is it too close to your face?
You know what? You don't want to be complaining.
Because I'm trying to make sure that this show...
No, I'm talking about it because I pop my peas and I...
Well, then don't pop it so fast and it's this hard.
Isn't that what our first episode was about? Tell people how to speak?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, you ready?
You know, it's amazing to me that in this day and age you could be so obtuse about sexual orientation.
I watch the L Word,
good.
Okay?
Good.
I watch queer as f.
That's not what it's called.
Okay, Michael.
So before we start this episode, Jackie and I would like to start with a disclaimer.
Yes, we are not queer identifying Black women, so we don't experience some of the same discrimination friends, family, peers, and others face.
But we will do our best to elevate those voices and the many others that have been silenced, especially here in the South. So Dr. Cutts wrote a chapter in a book called Queer South Rising, Voices of the Contested South. So it's a collection of essays by those who identify as both Southern and queer. And in the book, Dr. Cutts talks about the different layers of being Black, Afrocentric, a Southern belle, and queer.
She also speaks about coming out to a Southern mom, which I could imagine would be hard.
So before we hear something from her, Jackie, what were some of the perceptions of queerness growing up in Houston?
I mean, honestly, Dalia, I didn't hear about queerness until I got in college. You know, I grew up very in Houston in the South, very Baptist church. So for the longest of time, I thought like being LGBTQIA with being anything within that spectrum was wrong. And so for the longest, I didn't know about it. I wasn't educated on queerness specifically, but I just knew I had a bad perception of it. But how about you, Dalia? Because I know you grew up in a smaller area.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So like, yeah, it was. I think it's kind of like magnified, you know, because you're kind of living in the city, so nobody's probably outwardly saying anything about it. But I knew in the South, like you know, it was looked down upon whenever I was growing up, and you know, we kind of didn't really speak about it. And if you did speak about it, you know, you kind of got very like backward answers about it. So for a long time when I was growing up, I had the same perception about queerness as well, about how it was something that you weren't supposed to do. And it honestly, like until I got into high school, into college, then I realized, like, you know, that's you know, it's kind of crazy to think that way. And, you know, this kind of notion of, you know, don't ask, don't tell is kind of prominent in the South. And Dr. Cutts kind of talks about that.
The Southern twist on it, I think, is the don't ask, don't tell takes on an entirely different meaning in the South, in some places in the South. And for me, it's kind of like I recently moved to Mississippi from Atlanta. And so one of the conversations that I always have with my friends is that I had forgotten that Atlanta is the South, but Mississippi is still very much Southern. So I think that in some spaces in the South that being queer is very much an out thing, like a space like Atlanta. There was always, you know, queer spaces that I could go to, and there were, you know, queer identified people and queer identified people in positions of leadership and were very open about it. Whereas in a space that may be considered more quote unquote Southern, you may not have that as much. So if I'm just thinking about my just experiences kind of going through life as always having lived in the South, it's just one of those identities that I'm always thinking about, okay, so do I include this as part of my identity today or do I not? I guess it's a challenge as well as a privilege sometimes is that I'm not always read as queer whatever that means. And I say that because I've experienced being in spaces where people say, oh, I didn't know, you know, you date, or you identify as queer. And this is after they might have said something that was not queer friendly, and I speak up. So in that sense, I'm not always read as queer. So people who are read as queer, may not have that kind of navigation.
Dr. Cutts also touches on this belief of what queerness is supposed to look like, and we'll get into that a little bit more later on in the show when we talk about identities.
Yes, but before we do, we both have the privilege of having very supportive moms who we've seen go through so much and that we know are very hard-minded women. And I mean, we're Southern. What else do you think we're going to get? But we both know that feeling of telling her something we are really afraid of because of the way that she would react.
This notion of not really wanting to disappoint your mother really kind of hit home for me. And even just within my own family, I have like a gay person in my family who I've never met, but I know because of like the ideologies that my family had, they didn't support that lifestyle. So I know that if I was, and even though that happened years before I was born, it's still just like that fear that if I was to become, if I was born that way, then how would my family treat me? It's just a fear, you know, but that's not my identity, but it's still something that I could recognize. And I could say that if that was me, then I would probably have been ostracized.
Yeah, yeah. And Dr. Cuss kind of talks about how coming out to her own mother wasn't this, like, you know, dramatic scene. She says she didn't talk for, like, a few days, but that's really how they coped with it. And Dr. Cuss talks about how relieved she was, you know, finally kind of telling her truth to her mom, which was her main concern. And I can totally identify with that about not wanting to disappoint your own mother, especially for being who you are.
She also talks about the Southern aspect, especially mixed with Southern hospitality, which is warm and sweet, but may not always be well-intentioned. Like, you know, when your family kind of gives you that backwards compliment, like, you know what I'm talking about?
Or they give you that, they give you that.
Like that side eye, like that smirk.
Yeah. And yeah, or you go on, girl.
It was very much a contentious space for me. I don't know if it was as much for my mom, but it was for me in trying to decide, okay, when am I going to share this part of me with her? And ironically, that didn't come until a couple of years ago. It was about, what, 2013, maybe 13, 14? And that's very late. Because it's, you know, I haven't had intimate relationships with men in quite a long time. So I'm pretty sure that my mother knew, but just the actual conversation of saying, this is who I am. You know, that acknowledgement is always a very difficult space, or at least it was a difficult space for me. You know, my mom was, she was a young mother. She was a single mother, and she had a lot of, trials and things that she had to go through and things that she probably doesn't even know that I know about. But just, she had a lot of experiences in her life that were very difficult, and I did not want to do anything that would be disappointing to her. And I felt like that me, you know, acknowledging, yes, I'm queer, would be disappointing to her. Now, mind you, the reason why I say that I felt like she knew was because I told her about being queer because of my most recent relationship. But the relationship I was in prior to that was about 10 years. We were together for about 10 years and lived together for much of that time. And so we were just roommates, you know. And so I think that's one of the things when we talk about Southern queerness, particularly in communities of color, is that we get a lot of roommates, or as my mother still says, your little friend.
Now, beyond this family point in the essay, Dr. Cutts talks about the challenge of being Afrocentric, queer, and a Southern Belle.
The Afrocentric part comes from when I was working on my dissertation. Afrocentrism, Malife Asante, was one of the frameworks that I was using. And there was a line in one of his texts that talked about people are identifying as queer. And basically, and I don't want to misquote him, but in not so many words, the conversation was that you can't necessarily identify with both, or you have to preface one over the other, being Black or being queer, because those are competing in terms of, you know, seeking freedom. And I was just like, wait, so I agree with what he's saying here, but this piece, you know, I don't know if I wholly agree with that. And so that was a question for me. Could I identify as Black and Afrocentric and this Southern Belle and, you know, all of these things could and queer, and could I identify with them simultaneously? And what does that mean for me?
Cuts even talks about how in the Black Southern community, many say it's a white thing as a scapegoat. And so these identities that she lives in are in a way reduced.
I think that queer people have been here, queer Black people have been here since, you know, the beginning of time. And it's not necessarily attributed to any sort of race. But I do feel like that is often used, that argument that being queer is a white thing. It's used to kind of sometimes shame people of color who identify as queer, and to also not include, queer people of color in conversations when we're talking about seeking justice and freedom, you know. And so that's a way to kind of exclude us. And that's anyone who knows anything about, you know, we talk about the civil rights movement all the time. You know, Bayard Rustin was, of course, at the forefront of the civil rights movement and was very much a queer identified man. So people may not have been having those conversations as openly as they were talking about, you know, the rights for Black people, but queer people of color is not a new conversation, and we have to be included. When we're talking about freedom for Black people, queer people of color also have to be included.
Another form of exclusion that Dr. Cutts points out in her essay is the use of sexual assault to demean someone who actually identifies as queer.
To that point, I don't want to discredit anyone's experiences or suggest that that doesn't play a role for some people. Yes, it does play a role for some people. I don't personally feel like it played a role for me. I just felt like this, I don't know why, but when I was seven, I saw this young lady and it was just something about her. Have I had my own experiences or youth experiences that were challenging regarding sexuality? Absolutely. But for me, those things were just separate from my identity, or not really separate, but it wasn't something that influenced me. But I think it's a lot easier sometimes to say, or not easier, I don't want to say that either, because again, I don't want to discredit anyone's experiences, but I'm talking about from those who are looking from the outside looking in. So not speaking from the perspective of the people who may have had some traumatic experiences regarding sexuality as a youth and, you know, possibly that contributed. So not speaking from their perspective, but speaking from the perspective of people who are on the outside looking in, that's a way for them to say, okay, well, this can't be a real thing. This has to be a manufactured thing. And it has to be something that happened because something was done to you. And that's not true. You know, that's not true. It may be true for some people, but that's not true for, I would say that's not true for people with whom I've had conversations. And it's just like in teaching classes on diversity, you know, I actually had someone to say to me one time, well, how did this person know, you know, that he was queer unless this happened to him or what have you? And I said, well, how did you know that you weren't queer? And she just looked at me. She was like, well, I just knew. I said, but how did you know that you weren't queer? You know, how did you know? How did you know that you loved who you loved. And she was like, but I just knew, like, that's not the same. But how is it not the same? How is that not the same question? You just knew. So it's not always about, you know, this, oh, I had this traumatic event happen to me. And, you know, I know queer women who have never had any intimate interaction with males in their lives. And they have always known, you know, this is who they were. So I do think that those are conversations, especially in the space that we're in now, those are definitely conversations to be had. But I don't think that we need to start adopting this this victimization perspective.
I mean, just to sum it up, this whole conversation, it's just bringing awareness to the queer identities, but also just recognizing that one queer person is not the same. Sexuality is a spectrum, you know, and also not looking for excuses or diminishing anyone's experiences, because at the end of the day, I don't know if you saw the tweet where someone was saying, like, I cannot accept the fact that you're gay, but still respect you. And it's like, you don't accept, like, there's nothing to accept. Like, there's nothing to debate. Like, if someone is telling you this is who they are, then this is who they are, and you have to believe them. There's nothing to accept. There's nothing to deny. At the end of the day, just listen to people, listen to their experiences, and be an ally. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. I think that my takeaway from this whole conversation with the Dr. Kutz was that how I didn't realize how complicated people can make out the identities of being queer, being Black, and then being a Southern Belle as well. Because a Southern Belle is supposed to look a certain way, right? You're supposed to talk a certain way, supposed to appear a certain way. And I love how Dr. Kutz is embracing these identities and just, like, kind of expressing that, you know, queerness does not look one way. Afrocentric does not look one way. Being Southern Belle doesn't look one way. And, you know, either way is going to be beautiful no matter, you know what I'm saying? No matter what way you present it.
Definitely.
Now, before I even left the interview, though, you know, even though this was a really good conversation, we had to kind of, you know, take a swerve around the corner.
We got to ask the most important question to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, so basically, how do you feel about Beyonce?
I love Beyonce. Last year, a good girlfriend of mine said, you know what, we're going to this Beyonce concert. I actually have, and I'm just gonna send this to you for jokes.
Yeah.
In the email. I actually did a stand-up comedy type thing.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to send it to you, where I talk about single ladies. And the whole premise of the comedy is that, you know, I'm very new to the Beehive. I've always loved and appreciated Beyonce's work, but I wasn't a Beehive member until, not Lemonade. What was the name of the album before?
Beyonce?
Right before Lemonade. Beyonce.
Self-titled?
With. Was that the one it was? The one that she dropped when no one in December of 20? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So I was like, and it was, and I think it was because at that time I felt like that was grown woman Beyonce. And so she was speaking to me and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So the premise of the comedy was like, if you all don't laugh at me, I'm not going to get my beehive. I'm not going to get my ID card and my leotard because you have to have those.
You can find Dr. Kutz on Twitter at eclectic_grits.
Dear Mama, you did a wonderful job raising me. From you, I learned how to be a hardworking, strong, dedicated woman and mother. From you, I learned how to be good to people, even if they're not good to you.
From you, I learned to have the courage of my convictions, to never be afraid to stand up for yourself. And from you, I learned that being me was acceptable, as long as it was the me defined by society standards, and sometimes your standards. Yet the me that I am, the me that I've always been, the me that I've become is complex. I'm happy and sad.
I'm successful and a failure. I am a lover and a fighter. I am courageous and afraid, and I am queer. I love God, but I'm queer. I love you with all that I am, but I am queer.
I never want to hurt you, but I am queer. I never want to embarrass you, but I am queer. And I'm proud of who I am. I love who I am. God loves me as I am. I am queer.
I don't want you to try to figure out where you went wrong with me. You didn't. It has nothing to do with how you did or didn't raise me. You did the best you knew how, and I know I wouldn't be the strong, independent woman I am today had I not had you as a mother. But this is also who I am.
It's always been me. For much longer than you know, it has always been me.
My first love was a girl. My strongest love was a woman. Yes, there have been men. There have been marriage. There may be more men in the future, but my passion is for women.
I'm not telling you this in hopes that you'll accept or tolerate me or any woman that I love. I'm not asking for your permission. I just can be silent no longer.
My silence and or avoidance only serve to support the assumption that I am ashamed, and I am not.
I'm telling you because I feel you deserve to know. You deserve the truth.
This is my truth. Love you.
A special thank you to Dr. Cutts for reading the essay she wrote to her own mother. The letter is featured in Queer South Rising. And also another special thanks to LaKayla Williams and Rakarsha Mobley for contributing their beautiful voices as well.
So Jackie, what's your to and fro moment this week?
My to and fro moment this week would just have to be all the support we've been getting on to and fro. Like, this is our first episode recording since we launched. And so it's been interesting, and it has me in awe of how much support we've been getting, not only from friends and families, but strangers. So just the fact that people like us, people listen, which is very weird to me. So that's just my to and fro moment. Like, my to and fro moment goes out to y'all, the listeners. Like, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. Thanks for tweeting. Like, I love y'all.
Can I hop on that bandwagon with you? Because I agree.
No, you have to have your own.
I can agree. Can I agree?
The script says, what about you? Which means that you're supposed to say your own idea and not
steal
mine.
Jackie, but you, as a black woman, you're supposed to uplift me and keep me going.
You don't tell me what to do.
Anyway, I think that my to and fro moment, since I have like wedding bells in my head,
she just dropped the hottest video. Hold on. The rest of y'all doing save the date invitations, but my girl out here got a save the date video. And you know what? It wasn't even her idea.
Right?
Her man did it behind her back.
Get you a country boy. That's all you gotta get you a
that's
country
something
boy.
That girls would tweet and be like, hashtag goals.
Country boy. I'm telling y'all, y'all gotta get a Texas man. It's something about him. Something about him. But that's not the point.
I announced that like a mixtape, like, hey, my girl just dropped the hot.
Anyway, I think that my to and fro moment is just like, just not being afraid to, I guess, just be open and embrace love. I think that I'm a very private person when it comes to my relationship. Me and my fiance stay on the Jay-Z and Beyonce level of things. You know what I'm saying? Like, listen, wait.
Girl.
Because what's understood doesn't have to be explained. And I've always lived by that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I never really flaunt my relationship. And so, like, announcing the save the dates and, like, putting out our engagement photos has been the first time that I've, like, openly, like, one of the first times I've openly, like, pushed my relationship out there and put people in my personal life a little bit more. And I think that I'm a little embarrassed to do it. Like, right. Like I'm a Southern woman, like, and it comes from a very small conservative town. So, like, you know, you're not supposed to do all that stuff out in the open. And so just like outwardly embracing that, and then also not being afraid, to let your guard down, especially with your partner, no matter who you are, especially if they have the best intention for you.
I'm proud of you because you don't even let me retweet him from the to and fro page.
I do not. I don't need people in my business, thanks.
But I'm a complete opposite from you, single and loving it, not looking for nobody.
You know
what?
You better embrace that.
2018 is the year of me. It's the year of my career. So
that's all that matters.
Not
even
mad. But you do you. I'll be at your wedding. I'm all for other people's
love. I know. You ain't got no choice but to be at the wedding. I don't even know what you're talking about.
You getting married on my mom's birthday, but it's okay.
I mean, but hope matters more.
My mama.
I'm sorry, Miss Diane. I was playing. Well, that's the end of the show.
Make sure to tell your friends about us. Follow us on Twitter at To and Fro and like us on Facebook. We're streaming everywhere where you listen to your podcast.
This bomb diggity music is by Honey Banks. Follow her on Twitter at MS Chris Honey B.
Dalia, do you have one of your little sayings that you like to leave the people with, you know? Do you have something to say?
If you throw a rock over a fence, a hit dog gon' holler. Remember that.
Okay.
Remember that.
All right. Bye.